This episode is brought to you by the Sexton Single Malt Irish Whiskey, the best-selling Irish single malt in the U.S. The Sexton is an unexpected modern malt for the everyman. Rich in hue, approachable in taste, and memorable in character. Learn more at thesexton.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that Sam. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Hey, buddy.
How you been?
I've been great.
You? Look great. I'm going to open a beer.
Hey, it's like we've done this before.
Indeed.
Cheers. Hey, man. Nice I just want to say that it was like a month or so ago, I went to your new bar, Blue Quarter, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. It's really fun. Adorable, right?
It is. It's really cool. You know what? I was thinking about the... This kind of new-ish, I don't even know if it's a new-ish concept yet, but the idea of like having a bar that works in tandem with, I mean, for instance, Amore Amargo is that.
Yeah, we are.
It's in tandem with like a whole campus of other, like two other bars.
Sure.
But like I was thinking about like Katarsu in,
absolutely.
You know, it's behind Walters. Mm-hmm. And then also another place that Frankie Cocktails, Frank Cisneros, owns Bar Uchu, which is like in tandem with a sushi spot. There's like this idea of like, it's kind of like there's always been like hotel bars that kind of connect to the hotel and they feed off each other, you know, and they support each other. But the idea of having a restaurant and then a bar that are like kind of under the same roof, like kind of working with each other, it's a really cool idea. I mean, like you've got your restaurant bars and your bar restaurants, but then like
both. Yeah, I think here in New York, it's, you know, it's, or at least at Blue Quarter and at Amore Amargo, it's just a matter of utilizing as much of the space as we can use.
Yeah.
You know, Amore Amargo was the dry storage of the kitchen that is that services Mother of Pearl and Cienfuegos, and we convinced them to move the dry storage down to the very large and spacious basement and that we could make some revenue in that space. So we basically are like a weird roommate, you know?
Yeah.
We pay some rent on the room nobody wanted, basically. A similar situation happened at Blue Quarter. That room that we built the bar in was ostensibly his private dining room, but it looks so radically different than the rest of his place, which is bright and airy.
Right.
Blue Quarter, the space is thin and the ceiling's a little bit lower and there's no windows. So nobody liked it as a private dining area. So he stopped even trying 4 years ago. And he approached us at Amore. He came to the... So the guy who owns Local 92, which is the restaurant Blue Quarter's inside of, his name is Shai. He came to Amore and he basically came several nights over the course of several weeks. And then finally, he nerved up and leaned over the bar and just said, you guys really kill it in this little room. I'm like, yeah, we kill it. Little room. And he's like, I have a little room. So we walked over and we took a look at it. At the point, he had stopped using it for 4 years. It was just full of projects, you know, busted tables that needed repair and some boxes. And like it was just a closet.
And you're like, I can make a bar out of this.
And we were like, oh, yeah, let's do this thing. And very so cool. We built the bar and you saw it. It's really cute, right?
Yeah, very cool.
The vibe of the space is kind of Moroccan, Mediterranean, you know, some colors and fabrics and textures. And
you got my dude Nemanja working there.
Nemanja, awesome guy. And then the menu is all driven by tea. Every cocktail has a tea component.
I know. That's why I spun into a panic attack after having a cocktail or two there.
back on the caffeine.
It's a really great concept, and congrats on that.
Oh, thank you.
It's cool. So everyone should go check out Blue Quarter. Yeah. What are we talking about on the show today, man?
I got my buddy Thomas Spaeth in the room who is here because he's kind of, you know, he's kind of an interesting fellow.
Hi, guys.
Hey, welcome. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thomas currently works at Dear Irving, where he's been for about a year, and he also just started his first season at Grand Banks, which is that crazy seasonal bar that's out on a boat. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That thing.
Yeah.
Nutty. I don't know that I'd be able to handle that.
Lots of Dramamine.
Yeah, is that just
a dramamine?
It just comes right with the drinks. And then you're also here because you do some fun stuff on the side. You've got a hobby that's pretty cool and pretty interesting that we're going to talk about. Where you're like a midnight salvage ghost. I don't know, what are you? you run around the city and you find bike parts that are still chained to wherever they were chained up, but the bike's been cannibalized, and then the owner just says, fuck it, and leaves it. But you liberate those pieces, and you go home and you build bikes.
That's exactly what I do. I think
all right,
midnight
show's
salvage
over.
Ghost is exactly what I'd call it. Show's over. Great.
Wait, okay. I need to hear this in your words. Sorry, so you're great and everything, but I, you know,
yeah, well,
I've already pre-ordered your book. I don't need to hear any more from you.
Thank you. Ding, ding, ding.
I started doing this several years ago. I was, the whole seed was planted one day at a bar. I was with a buddy and his roommate got well drunk enough to confess something. He's like, dude, I've stolen bikes. And I was like, dude, that's fucked up.
Super fucked up. Yeah, okay. You can swear.
Okay. Cool. I was like, dude, that's fucked up, man. And he's like, well, hold on. It was chained outside my restaurant for 6 months. I was like, wait, so it didn't move for 6 months? He's like, no. And I was like, well, that somebody gave up a bike. How did you do it, though? I mean, kryptonite locks are serious. He's like, not if you have an angle grinder. I was like, a what?
Yeah. Yep.
He just had one in his messenger bag?
So he rented his from Home Depot in order to get that bike and build it up. And I was like, wow, that's, interesting. And the seed was planted and whatever. And then my girlfriend at the time had expressed several times that she wanted a bike. And I noticed on my commute to work, as I got off the Manhattan Bridge and went down Christie Street, there was this beautiful red Fuji frame that was a lady bike, like a lower slanted top bar.
Which I've never understood why that isn't for men.
I think it's for holdover from dresses,
long skirts.
Skirts and stuff. Yeah.
But I like the notion of not getting busted in the nuts, though.
Well, that's because, you have bad luck with bikes.
I'm an aggressive rider.
But I went by this thing week in and week out. The wheels were gone. The handlebars were gone. And I just
let's make that clear again. You're not grabbing bikes.
No, absolutely.
You're grabbing parts of bikes that have been abandoned. Because
they've either been stolen or
somebody chained up their bike and the wheels got grabbed and then they just left the frame because they're like, fuck it, I'm not dealing with this. Or vice versa. Sometimes the wheel is the only thing that's left there. So
yeah, sometimes. Yeah. I can't really understand what goes through people's heads when they leave a bike, but it happens all over the city. We all see these bike crashes all the time.
I'm going to recruit you and just let you know there's two bikes that have been chained up on the same signpost right in front of my window at Amore Margo for 2 years. Come get them.
I will definitely take a look at them. I can even remove them and throw them away if they're just an eyesore. Like
they are.
I only go for usable parts, but I'd love to help you guys out.
Yeah,
pretty up the pace.
They kind of are nice. They both have baskets on them, so people just throw their garbage in the baskets. So
that's fucked up.
There's these two bikes right out front that I have to clean the garbage out of their baskets all the time.
That sucks.
It does. You know what? They're like old Schwinn's. They look cool too. Is the thing, but they're sitting there just rusting away.
You know, we live in such a throwaway culture.
Yep.
Also, it's really disheartening. You know, and that's cool. I like this idea. I mean.
So you go under cover of darkness with your. You got an angle grinder.
So yeah, I tried to rent at Home Depot and they just looked at me. They're like, "We don't rent tools." I was like, "What the fuck is he?" All right, you know what? I'll buy one. And I did. And I brought it in my backpack to my shift that day, and I finished up. And it was like 12:30 at night. And I rode over to the bike. My heart was racing because I'd never done this before. I'd never even used an angle grinder before.
By the way, did you practice?
I mean, I pulled the trigger like in my apartment.
You didn't like grind something.
I didn't grind something. I was just like, I guess this is how it works. and the traffic on Christie Street was bumper to bumper. And on just the other side of that little park were the lights of two police cars attending to something. So I'm just sitting there like, what the fuck am I going to do? But I had committed to doing it that night. I had the tool. I was like, I can't go back now. It's like when you commit to a tattoo, even if they're like, 8 hour wait, you're like, where's the other shop? I got to go. But right. So I turn this thing on. It's loud as hell. And then I touch the lock with it and sparks are flying everywhere. And I just pull out for a second. I'm like, what am I doing? And like people in the cars looking over like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm just like, you know what? Screw it. And just,
you know what? I feel like if you just fucking go at it with confidence.
Yeah, totally.
And if somebody says, what are you doing? You say, look, this is my frame. It's been cannibalized.
Yes, exactly. So I just, as I like to do, I just hid in plain sight, cut that lock off, threw it over my shoulder and rode over the bridge feeling like the most victorious Robin Hood ever. I had my girlfriend's bike on my shoulder.
This reminds me of that scene in Ghostbusters when they're like drilling into the street on like First Avenue and the cops and Con Ed pull up and they're like, what are you doing? Like, it's cutting really well. It's fine.
Just gotta get in there.
Yeah.
I'm just doing this.
My very first bike was in New York City, that is, was a salvage bike from in front of Frankie's. And one of the Franks like cut the chain off of it. He was like, you need a bike? And it was an old like 3-speed British like rally.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it was a complete bike. I mean, I had to change some stuff on it, but it was like, my first bike was free, and he was just like, treat the bike.
That's a little different. That is stealing a bike.
No, but it had been sitting in front of Frankie's for like 4 years.
It was abandoned. Okay,
so I had to go like put new tires and new chain
and gears and chain stuff. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I think there's something very like that's a really beautiful thing. It is like a very Robin Hood, like, I don't, there's something very heroic about saving a bike, you know?
Absolutely. And then does it become obsessive? How many bikes have you done? How many bikes do you have?
I've done, I think, 11, and I have complete now just two. Sadly, last year, my main bike got, like, hit by a truck while I was working, and it was tied to the signpost outside. I came out, and it was just, like, folded in on itself.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That was my dad's bike. My mom bought it for him for his 30th birthday. That was a shot to the heart.
Oh, that stinks.
But, yeah, and I have, like, 3 or 4 other frames in my place waiting to be turned into usable bikes. But, yeah, it definitely became an obsession. I got new tools. I learned certain bike tools are made, like, they're by, like, Park Tool or something, and they're very expensive.
Right.
Comparatively so. And then I would go on YouTube, and someone's like, "Nah, man, just get a really big threaded rod and 2 long washers. It costs you $5. You get the same tool." And I'm like, yes, more of this DIY jerry rig stuff.
That's amazing, man. Restless bartender. Roaming around the streets at night, hijacking abandoned bike parts. How long does it take for you to put together? I mean, I don't know. I do ride bikes, but I'm not a technician of any kind.
You crash bikes.
I crash bikes. I get crashed. I get crashed on bikes.
Yeah.
I like to ride my bike in 2 cars. it's a war, and I'm trying to win.
I'm on your side, man.
But I don't know anything about bikes, but I do know this. Not every piece fits every bike, so you have to be kind of selective. Do you have, like, a map in your mind? I saw this frame over there on 10th Street, but I saw this wheel over here on 7th. I know that those two will match. Like, how do you...
The way I learned to get around that is just amass as many parts as possible.
And sure.
Always keep them on hand, but it is one of the more frustrating things.
This is New York, man. How big is your apartment?
Oh, bro, it's like the size of Roberta's.
What?
Dude, I'm not kidding. It's like 10 times the size of Memorial Margo. On just the top floor, and I have 2 floors.
I love that my bar is like a measuring device.
Totally.
You started that, by
I know,
the way.
I know.
You say it every week.
I do. I love it.
214 square feet?
40. 240.
240.
See, you don't listen.
I listen, man.
Wait, so, what? Okay, let's talk about that for a second. You live in a 2-floor gigundous apartment?
Yeah,
where?
Man. They're called the Taffy Lofts. It's a Klassen in DeKalb in Clinton Hill.
All right.
And I pay under a G. I'm so fortunate to have that place.
And you have 10 roommates? What's going on?
3 roommates. 2 of them are best friends of mine, and 1 of them is almost never there.
That's the best roommate.
That's the best roommate.
Yeah.
Really I used to live with a flight attendant. He was gone minimum 2 weeks out of the month.
I was talking with a flight attendant last night, and I was so excited to talk to her and pick her brain. About like hospitality on flights, I got to ask all the questions I've always wanted to ask, and I actually I invited her to come on the show.
Oh, rad!
So
I would love to talk hospitality with that because this was literally 20 years ago that I lived with this guy Steve Paquin, but Steve he would say, and by the way, even way back then there was an article written that I can recall him talking about how one of the most stressful jobs in the world at the time was being a flight attendant because he's like. It's as stressful as being a waiter or a bartender, which is a pretty stressful job. Except, as he put it, as he pointed it out really clearly, you can't just ask him to fucking leave.
True. Yeah.
You can't bounce anybody.
You can't open the hatch and
get out.
Well, I think United tried to counter yeah. that philosophy.
Right, but you can't. You know, once the thing's in motion, everybody's trapped. I'd be fascinated to talk about that. Best roommate. He was gone 2 weeks out of the month working, and then he'd take flights and go places.
So yeah,
he was never around. That's pretty fucking amazing. Now we should probably talk about bartending in general.
I was gonna say,
and we should also drink some whiskey. We got some the Sexton single malt Irish whiskey on the table here. Love that cork. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Cilantro.
All right, fine. Thanks, Dave.
I'm back.
Oh man, this is
we never
delicious.
Knew you were gone. We got some whiskey in here for you, Dave.
I'll be right there.
This stuff is delicious. You know, it's aged in Oloroso sherry butts. That's what's giving it that kind of nutty finish. Oh, there's Dave coming to get his. There's
hello, Dave, our producer.
Yes.
Yeah, it gives it like a jam, a fruity jam kind of flavor finish.
Sure. Yeah, it's a little bit savory. I like it. I'm a big fan.
I love sherry.
Indeed.
Same.
But like, I love sherry finished whiskeys. Maybe more than I love sherry on its own. It's like it's greater than some of its parts. You know, like the when you think about like classic cocktails, like the Bamboo, it makes sense because it's wine and wine, you know,
yeah.
like sherry and vermouth. But like the whiskey, like it's kind of interesting. Like when I was thinking, I was reading Jeffrey Morgenthaler's new book, the
Drinking Distilled,
and he basically like breaks down the categories of distilled spirits as beer and wine, and like he threw in like whiskeys, like it either comes from grass or from fruit.
Exactly.
And so
I loved that analogy that he made.
Yeah, it's really cool. And so you've got both of those in this, and it's really cool.
Yeah. And it also gives it fun usage. You know what I mean? Like almost 11 years ago when I was at Rye, we opened Rye, and one of the first drinks on the menu there, we called it the Havemeyer because we're just off of Havemeyer. But it was basically a Manhattan augmented with some sherry, mm-hmm. right? So like this sort of whiskey.
So you invented the Sexton?
With that, yes, no. But this sort of whiskey in that kind of drink would be it's less bottles to pick up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But it adds that little savory, nutty note, you know, that people can't put their finger on, but it adds a layer that makes it delicious, you know.
But like sherry finished whiskeys have been it's been going on for a long time in Scotland.
Uh huh. Yeah.
So this is fairly new for Irish whiskey.
Yeah, I think so. And don't forget, you know. You've had the Rieger, right? Rieger whiskey Rieger's here in America.
Kansas City. Yeah,
oh, that's sherry augmented, awesome. Right? It's not just finished in a cask; it has it added to it.
Yeah.
So I think adding sherry to whiskey or adding those sherry notes to whiskey has been around for a long, long time. Yeah, but I think this.
But
is
not in Irish
not,
whiskey.
Not in Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's.
I think it's pretty cool, especially because of the fact that, like, when you have like a triple distilled Irish whiskey's usually triple distilled, mm-hmm. and. So it's like a little bit more on the refined, like kind of chilled out vibes, you know?
Yes.
And then you vibes. Throw some chill ass vibes on yes. like from like the sherry. It's like, you're just chilling, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, it's a cocktail in a bottle.
Yeah.
It's great. Delicious. All right. Let's talk bartending. Or is it time to take a break, Dave?
We can do that if you want.
Dude, speaking of chill-ass vibes.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take
just
a quick...
Just riding the wave, man.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll come back with Thomas Spaeth, and we'll talk more about bartending over at Dear Irving and bartending on a boat. Grand Banks is a big old boat that's harbored here in New York City, and it's only open seasonally, but it's a crazy-ass bar. So we're going to come back and talk about sort of refined bartending at Dear Irving and probably the shit show that is bartending on a boat.
Your words, not mine.
This episode is brought to you by the Sexton Single Malt Irish Whiskey, a new and unexpected modern malt for the everyman and woman.
And woman, yeah. The whiskey is made from 100% Irish malted barley, triple distilled for smoothness in copper pot stills, which, I mean, are there any other kind of pot stills? I mean, they're usually copper, right?
Yeah, but it's nice to say.
I dude, all my bar tools are copper, so
yeah, totally. You are the copper guy.
And it's aged for 4 years in Oloroso sherry butts. That's, we were just talking about that on the first half of the show.
Yeah.
That's kind of unheard of for Irish whiskey. So it's aged for 4 years in Oloroso sherry butts, allowing maximum impact from the wine while controlling the level of oak flavor before it becomes too overpowering.
Right. The result is an approachable Irish single malt, perfectly balanced with a smooth finish that will leave you wanting more. And I want more right now, actually.
We're gonna Let's drink
some.
Do it.
We're going to drink some right now. This stuff tastes of honey and nuts. It's got a little dark chocolate action. I'm really enjoying it.
I am too. And you know what? One of my favorite Irish whiskey cocktails is the Tipperary.
Mm.
I mean, the thing is, like, with this, like, I feel like the sherry and the chartreuse together, mm-hmm. like, it, like with the whiskey and like a little bit of vermouth.
Of course,
that's what I want to try. Do we have chartreuse in the studio?
No, not yet.
We got to talk to Tim Master.
Tim Master. what we do have though is a bit of you know, Campari and vermouth. Maybe we should make a Irish Boulevardier action.
Yeah, totally.
For the second half of the show,
we will.
It's Negroni week.
It is Negroni week.
What a great tie-in. Or it was Negroni week.
It was.
And it will be Negroni week.
Studio magic.
Live from the future.
Cheers, y'all.
Cheers, guys.
And we are back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Souther.
Yeah, buddy.
What are we talking about, man?
We're talking about bartending and
on boats,
bike building, and boats. And,
I got to yesterday.
And
I
being was, restless.
I was at the I was at my bar at Grand Army, and I got to dig into my cabinet, the boss's cabinet.
The boss's cabinet.
And
which I
found,
love that.
I found some stuff. I had some friends in, you know, like. Brad Thomas Parsons is writing a new book.
BTP, the last call, right?
And so he was asking about like what my like last call drink would be, and I said, "Well, an iced tea because I'm allergic to caffeine these days, and if it's my last drink, it will literally probably kill me, and it's my favorite drink of all time." But I was digging around the cabinet last night. Aaron Polsky.
Yes, I saw on your Instagram. I saw him behind your bar shaking something.
I mean, was he shaking that cocktail?
Looked like he was rocking it to sleep.
So I was pulling out a bunch of stuff, and I found a bottle of Laird's rum, like as in Laird's Applejack rum, a flask of it that I got on a fishing trip off the coast of Belmar, New Jersey, with Dean Ween of the band Ween, the guitar player from Ween. So it was me and a couple buddies. We went out fishing in the Atlantic Ocean. And I had a flask of Laird's rum, and it's basically it's just vodka, but it was as we were like hanging out, like we're fishing for bluefish, like I was like drinking this rum, like I was like I don't know, like I don't normally get dizzy on a boat, but I think this weird Laird's rum is like probably doing most of the dizziness, and so I can't imagine like actually like. I'm a professional at drinking on a boat, but like bartending on a boat.
Yeah,
I mean you're not like catching a bunch. So like for our listeners, Grand Banks is on a pretty fucking big like clipper like yacht kind of thing off the west side of Manhattan. It's docked there, but you definitely feel like the movement of the water when you're there.
Oh, big time, especially when the ferries go by or occasionally the cruise ships. We rock hard.
Yeah.
You can sometimes take one of those steps. We rock hard. Sometimes you take one of those steps that you normally do behind a bar, like you pivot on the ball of your foot to turn around to get glassware or something, and then you'll find yourself almost falling on the deck.
It's almost like an American Gladiator like challenge.
a lot of power stance, a lot of legs far apart, making sure that you have yourself
Joey Ramone.
Firmly on the ground. Yeah, exactly. And it's funny when you have a couple drinks in one tin and you're pouring and you're eyeballing between two glasses and they're rocking back and forth. You're like, I hope you guys are friends.
Yes.
You might have to do a little sharing.
Yeah, yeah. Close enough.
So
whenever I have drinks that I don't think are evened up enough, I don't sit them side by side. Right. Where are your drinks, guys?
As far apart as you
put them side by side, they notice.
You go over there.
Over there. Yeah, right. Your drinks, guys.
Don't look at each other.
But it's probably a fucking blast. This is your
totally
first season,
is.
So you don't have a lot of data to speak to. But
it's true. But the shifts that I've worked have been super fun. I mean, I was telling you before the show, even if it's a slow night, or even if it's cold, we'll just I'll stand over by the heater, or I'll throw like a navy sweater on, and then just feel the rocking of that water, and it feels so terrific. And people out there, even like. We have blankets for our guests, but even as they're wrapped in blankets, if it gets cold at night, they're still smiling.
Lots
they're
of hand
this
jobs
is great.
Under those blankets.
Quite a few, I'm sure.
Dude, but
handies on the boat.
What I want to know, what I would like to hear about is this like your first like seasonal bartending job?
No, actually, my first bartending job of ever was at Yellow Green,
okay.
Over at Sleep No More. So yeah. I started out doing it outdoors.
Yes.
In quite a shit show environment. He came on after I left. Okay. I was there when Julie Renee Williams was there.
Oh, yeah.
And Jeff Pruitt was one of my bar dads or mentors.
Was Reynolds still there at that time?
Yes.
Yeah. Wildman.
No, I'm sorry. Reynolds wasn't. I was thinking of Chef Ricky King.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also Wildman.
Yeah.
So that's this is like very fascinating thing because I've never worked in seasonal job.
Like, well, that's not true. I've worked seasonal jobs when I was a very young person in my hometown, which is a seasonal town.
Right.
Your favorite place.
Yeah, I hate that place. But Panama City Beach, go to hell. But never behind the bar. I worked in an amusement park.
I worked at a putt-putt / paddleboat place for one summer in Oklahoma.
I rented jet skis.
but it's different because when you're bartending and working in like Gallo Green and like the rooftop at Park South or like
he worked there too.
I was there for the opening season.
Oh yeah. Shit.
So I'm actually pretty used to that whole seasonal vibe and its pitfalls or like employees, its extravagances.
Sorry, 11 Madison Park. Like
Oh yeah, summer house.
Yeah. Like that shit didn't to me. There. Like it seems like I don't know. It's very like it's like fucking hit it and quit it, right?
It's it's a cash grab.
You're just like boom, 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 boom.
It's a cash grab. You are like, again, I worked seasonal and I lived in a seasonal town. Like, it is a cash grab. You are crushing everything. Put it this way, unrelated to what we're talking about, but in my hometown, and by the way, I left there at age 17 and have never been back. So this data is old, but it was true 17 years ago. I assume it's probably still true. My best friend worked at Domino's Pizza. He still delivered pizzas in the summer. Domino's Pizza, Wendy's, McDonald's, and there was one, Pizza Hut, were the locations in my hometown were the top selling locations for the chains, each respectively, and they were all closed 4 months of the year.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Yeah, that is
incredible. For instance, when he worked for Domino's and they'd get a call, hey, room 101 at the Holiday Inn, we need a pizza, they'd make him 11 pizzas. The pizza for them and 10 to walk around the pool with. And they'd all sell.
Oh, damn. That's genius.
Wow. Domino's was only a block from the beach. They had guys who would literally just carry 10 pizzas to the beach all day long. Carry 10 down, sell them, come back. Carry 10 down, come. Like, it's insanity. It is a cash grab.
Dude.
So seasonal work at a bar in New York City on a rooftop or on a boat, I'm sure, is got to be similar.
Yeah, I mean, it's a blast. It really, part of your ability to maintain sanity throughout it depends on having a solid team of people with. Because
for sure.
It inevitably on Gallo Green gets to be like World War Z. You're in this box and guests are funneled at you where there are no seats. It's just like it's a line of guests coming at you trying to get in the box, get your attention and get some alcohol. And you get their card and you're like, cool, out of the way. Your turn. What do you want?
It's yeah,
like
there's no banter. There's
dude,
no.
It's like that scene in Goodfellas. Like, fuck you, pay me. Fuck you, pay me. Fuck you, pay me. It's
right.
It's pretty wild. And
you're not getting to know them. You're not like
no.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know about. Like the. I mean, I'm sure that it's a little bit different at Grand Banks.
I feel like
there are seats at Grand Banks and people hang out.
You can garner like a client base. Like yep. Do you have regulars?
I have regulars from other bars that will come visit or industry friends, but I've only been on that ship like 5 or 6 shifts. So
opened, right?
Yeah,
right for the season. Yeah,
and I'm really happy. It's a large, hungry team of bartenders. So if I do get a shift that I either don't want to work or can't, I just put it up and it's immediately scooped up. So I can go 2 or 3 weeks without working if I don't want to.
Sure, because people want to grab that cash and
exactly
like those are the. I bet some of the people who work there maybe that's their only job for the year.
Yeah,
right?
For quite a few people, yeah. Or at least their only job for the summer. I'm very lucky to also have Dear Irving 3 nights a week to fall back on.
Yeah, I feel like it's got to be the difference between like service and a service. I'm giving you a service. I'm making you a drink. I'm not giving you service though.
Yeah,
but on the boat, the standards for hospitality are. They're up there, like with Roof at Park South. The opening of that, I mean, we trained for, I think, 4 weeks before opening. They're like, we are going to
so you were there
be
the opening season of that?
The opening season,
so you're like, John Hendo was there? And
yep.
Yeah, cool.
Will Wyatt.
Yeah, right.
Great people, man. I love that team. And I'm really happy to be on the team with Grand Banks. Zach Snyder, who runs the beverage program.
I forgot he's over there.
Did a lot of cherry picking for that team.
Cool.
And got Chelsea as the head bartender, Shalan, myself, my friend Drew, Sarah Reardon, Chris Barry, who ran the Musket Room for a while, one of his buddies, Sean Saunders, who was down at Slowly Surely with him. Like, a lot of solid people to work with.
Good names in our town.
No doubt.
That's rad. So you got a great balance. You get to do that a couple nights a week, and then you get to go do sort of a more refined, more service-driven thing at Dear Irving. Talk about Dear Irving a little bit.
Dear Irving is an amazing, gorgeous bar. I'm really fortunate to be able to call that home. Really, really fortunate with my schedule. I'm there every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, so I get all the people. lots of industry friends come in during the week, and weekend is just more toward that cash grab style.
Yeah, I mean, we all have that in New York.
No doubt. But it's funny, when you were giving me notes on the competition outside, and you're like, you know, you wouldn't... Isn't it weird when people... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I was a judge in a competition a couple of days ago for Yawara Cachaça. It was one of their heats for their Cachaça Me If You Can competition, which the next heat is next month, and then the winner goes on to go down and compete in Brazil. And Thomas was one of the ones who's traveling on.
So cool.
Made the cut.
Yeah, I'm very, very happy about that. But you were talking to me about my performance, and you're like, you know, isn't it weird when you're sitting in a bar and people are staring at you and not talking? And in my head, I was like, that happens a lot at Dear Irving.
Yeah.
They love just zooming in on the show.
Yeah, of course.
And we give them the show for sure.
Yeah.
And the drink to back it up.
So, yeah, that leads me to what I wanted to ask just a couple seconds ago. So when you're at Grand Banks and then you're at Dear Irving, I mean, like, obviously, like you said, like, the kind of being more of a seasonal job where, like, you're, like, just banging out drinks and, like, you might not necessarily have, like, a clientele that's very regular. When you're at Dear Irving, you have, like, a lot more, like...
Oh, a lot.
A lot more, like, industry professionals yep. coming in. A lot more, like, regulars.
Yeah.
I think based on the fact that it's, like, the boat is seasonal, you can't really... Like, I know that, for instance, like, Dear Irving is one of the most beautiful bars in the city,
agreed.
I would say. And, like, it's really cool the way that when we've had, like, Megan Dorman on the show before, and talking about, like, the architecture and the design, the interior design of the place, and even Tom Rickern, and, you know, like, we always end up talking about the design of the
place.
The space
is amazing. You travel through time. Yeah.
Yeah.
You enter the room in like the deco 60s, and then the further into the space you go, the further back in time you go.
Yeah. It's amazing. And like, it's like, I would say magical. Like, you know,
yeah,
like,
it's transportive for sure.
Yeah. Because like places like that are essentially the places where like you have bar regulars who come in very frequently, and it ends up being like their spot, and it's like the kind of spot where people like might get engaged and might get married.
Oh, yeah,
and like
I've seen that happen several times,
you know. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the seasonality of the boat would lend that to be like a good spot to like have a wedding on the boat
and
party and everything. But like, there's like kind of like, I don't know, like there's like the infrequency of availability with the boat is like, it might chop up like those like very romantic, like steady vibes. Whereas
it's not
like,
something you can depend on the way Dear Irving's always there
exactly.
to be that you know, transportive
you know what I'm
situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Whereas the boat, you're like, oh, do you think we can get on the boat today? You think the weather's nice? Like, will they be serving late? Like,
yeah. Are they booked for a private event? Like
exactly.
All the things.
Although truth told, one of my buddies is going to propose to his girlfriend on the boat this summer. But no more info.
Spoiler alert!
Holy cow! Yeah, just outed his ass.
No, I just heard about it, and I'm super pumped for him. It's gonna be awesome.
See, that's okay. That's the magic of like what we do,
yeah,
and like, we work. The places
we give people enough courage to do the things they want to do.
That
anyway.
Dutch courage.
That's
you know?
Exactly what we do. I actually just heard. I heard from Lacey Hawkins the other day when she was talking to us about Monkey 47 that she was in a bar in Connecticut and watched a couple get married with the rings that go around the corks of the Monkey 47 bottle.
Holy
they, like,
shit.
Because they had to pull it off then and there, and they didn't have rings yet, and they're like, fuck it, grab two bottles, use those, they're beautiful.
That's fucking beautiful, man.
That is beautiful.
Yeah. Impromptu bar service.
That's
pretty rad.
I was doing, this is many years before you were on the show, Souther, but I think I've told this story before. I was down at Tales of the Cocktail, and there was a big employees-only party, and they were like, we're not going to do a guest list.
Oh, the EO. Yeah.
Yeah, and so like, I just happened to catch them. I got two tattoos that day, one of them on my leg, and then I got an EO tattoo. And the reason why I got it is because I was walking around, and I had the Zoom recorder from Heritage Radio Network. I was doing a lot of interviews. I fucked up the settings and only got about 15 minutes of quality audio.
Damn.
And about 8 hours of static.
Oh, no, man.
But quality stories. You got quality stories.
Well, you know what? I live the stories.
Exactly.
So,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And one of them was this one. I was walking down the street and I ran into Steve Schneider and Rob Kruger and a bunch of the people from Employees Only. And they're like, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, I don't know. It's Tales of Cocktail. I'm probably doing a lot of shit. And they're like, we're having a big party in this theater. There's like a bunch of performers. We're building this big ass bar. There's going to be a tattoo artist like doing EO tattoos for free.
It was at One Eyed Jack's, which is a crazy theater bar down there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And they were like, you know what? We decided we're not going to do a guest list. There's no VIPs or anything. Steve Schneider had just been on the show like a couple weeks before that. And they were like, they kind of look at each other and like, you know what? You're going to be our one VIP for this event.
You're the one.
Bring in your audio equipment and interview everyone. Like, interview people standing in line because it's going to be everyone. Like,
yeah, yeah, of course.
No one gets in.
Coveted position, yeah.
And so, like, I was like, holy shit. Like, do I have a badge or anything? Like, no, because there's no, this doesn't exist.
What are you, the sheriff?
Oh, come on, man.
Hall monitor.
But the thing is, like, I was interviewing all these people getting Employees Only tattoos, and my favorite story, and actually led me to get one myself, it was this couple. They were both getting tattooed, and they were like, I was like, so what does this tattoo mean to you, and why are you getting it? And they were like, they were super cute. They were like, talking to each other. They were like, do you want to tell the story? No, you tell it. Ah. So anyway, they started telling the story. And like, well, we met at Employees Only.
Right. They were sad.
We exchanged info.
Yeah.
We had our first date at Employees Only. We got engaged at Employees Only. Had our wedding reception at Employees Only. And every year on our anniversary, we go to Employees Only. And I'm like, after I wiped the tears out of my eyes, I was like, holy shit. Like, that's like the power of like.
It's the power of what we can offer people.
Yeah, totally.
We create a space that becomes special and means something to people.
Yeah, and I feel like Dear Irving is definitely one of those spots, you know?
I've only had two in the 7 years at a more.
And Grand Banks.
I've only had two proposals, but I've had two. That's a lot.
I've had two in the past, like, 3 months at Dear Irving.
Yeah, Dear Irving's really beautiful.
Dude, I've had two weddings, and we've been open for 3 years.
Amazing.
You got to get that shit together, man. Well, I guess it's not big enough to have a wedding.
Right.
It's only 240.
Although there
feet.
Is a couple who's scratching at the door trying to see if they can rent the space for their wedding reception.
At Bar Sardine, we had these two magnificent regulars, Alex and Shannon, and they came in.
At Bar Sardine, too. This guy's been all over the place.
Where haven't you worked?
P.S. Let's back up for a second. We didn't really get too into it because we started talking about being the restless bartender that steals bikes at night.
Salvages.
Sorry. Yeah, let's class up the joint.
I've had stuff stolen off my bikes. I am vigorously anti-bike theft.
Of course, as am I. You know, it is. But I also understand that there is a lot of abandonment here in New York City.
Yeah, it's true.
And maybe in some small way, you're helping the city by cleaning some of it up.
I like to think so.
But yeah, so you've only been bartending proper for 3 years.
Yeah.
You hear that, Damon?
Yeah.
3 years. But you've worked at tons of places.
Yeah, I've been really lucky.
Can you keep a job? What's the problem?
my first shift at Gallo Green, I was hired as a waiter, and they're like, you're on the top of the roof. You get this section off. It's an open bar, just beer and wine. And halfway through, they asked for, they started asking for margaritas. So I asked for a manager to send me a set of tools. And I opened up the well that I was behind anyway. And at the end of my shift, the manager was like, all right, you're a bartender from here on out. I didn't know you could do that shit.
Wow.
But I learned it at Eastern Standard. Where somebody proposed at the bar by pre-getting us to break one of our martini glasses and put the ring on the glass and then fuse the glass back together and got the martini served to his girlfriend, then fiance, with a martini with a wedding ring on it, or an engagement ring.
Wait, what? Break the glass?
Stem of a martini glass and then fuse it back together with the wedding ring slipped on.
So she had to smash the glass to get the ring?
To break the...
Snap it again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty fun. You see what he's saying?
Yeah.
I see the wheels turning. You're going to be doing this at Grand Army.
I'm just thinking about like breakage costing and shit like that at this point. Like,
for these moments.
It's worth it. It's
priceless.
Worth it. Exactly.
Priceless.
It's one glass. You bring your own.
So what would you say, I have a similar story, getting into bartending. It was the same thing. I came on as a waiter, and, like, a month later, I was managing the bar. What would you say is the most important thing that you learned from that quick transition into like becoming a bartender so fast? I mean, like, for instance, there are a lot of elements, obviously, to being a bartender, and some of them are really joyous, you know, like the moments where you have like someone, like people having these like monumental moments in their lives, like getting engaged and getting married and stuff like that. What would you, for a lot of the younger bartenders out there, what kind of advice would you give them for like fast tracking into it?
Truth told, I don't believe, like, I was fortunate with the skills that I had been taught at other places that sort of fast track was easy enough to accomplish. Mm-hmm. But the skill, the thing that was transformative for me, I learned at Bar Sardine with working alongside my buddy Alex, who's been their head bartender forever, and or at least since Wrestler and Goto left. But that was that when you're serving tables, even if you have a large section, the experiences are a lot more compartmentalized. You engage with that table till they have what they need for you to move on to the next, for leave them with their appetizer or drinks or whatever, and move on to the next table. And you engage one-on-one and really make that engagement as valuable or as lasting as all parties want it to be. I started bartending doing that, especially when I got to Bar Sardine and it was less World War Z and more, you know, restaurant at the bar. And Alex was constantly, every shift, on my ass, dude, I need your periphery to widen, and I need you to see all people and not just make the one person you're talking to think you're their best friend. You need to either make the whole bar think you're their best friend or do something, but it's got to be more universally spread. And it just took like him riding my ass for me to look around more. And now sometimes I see other bartenders and I'm like, wow, you're really making that one person's night and fucking my night up.
Like, right.
Come on, man, spread the love. I yeah. need you to manage the entire room, the entire bar, and less so just your little section.
But what happens when, okay, I had this happening to me last night. There was, and I always make sure that I introduce guests to the guests next to them.
Oh, I love yeah. doing this. Yeah.
And that way, it like saves you.
Oh, yeah, big time.
A lot of time and a lot of, like if you, essentially, like distracting guests from whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
But also, you're
enriching their experience. Host. Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Know? But like, if I'm like talking to some guests and someone over here in my periphery is like fucking trying to wave me down, I've definitely been, and I know this isn't the greatest thing in the world, but like, I'm like, that's just rude to like,
yeah.
be like, ah. I mean,
it is.
So I've definitely shushed people.
Oh yeah. You're in the penalty box. Like, hey,
calm the fuck down.
You're in the penalty box.
But even acknowledging them right there is going to give them the satisfaction right. they didn't have when they were waving.
Acknowledgement
like,
goes
the last
a really
thing they
long
want
way.
Is to feel yeah. invisible. Like that was yeah. one of the lasting lessons I got from Gaz Regan was you need to determine why somebody came into your bar, because in his words, I mean, I don't know if it's the last thing, but the first thing they came in for was not the alcohol. Anybody can drink cheaper at home.
Yeah,
they came in for something else. Now people have told me they think it's music or lighting. There's the idea of human connection, but whatever it is, figure it out and work on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it when people connection. Call him Gaz Regan. I can kind of like timestamp like someone's age based on if they call him Gary or Gaz. Gaz,
yeah.
I call him Gary.
Yeah.
That means I'm an old fuck.
I was on the food scene recently, and it was me, Gaz, and Naren Young. It was a good episode. We talked about Negronis.
When are we going to start calling him Naren Old?
Soon, Naren. A
couple more awards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're towards the end of the show here, so we should wrap it up. It's been great talking to you, Thomas. You're at Dear Irving 3 nights a week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and you're sporadically at the Grand Banks.
It's true.
You can be seen all throughout the city late at night with your angle grinder and a spray of sparks flying away from your bike salvaging service that you're doing for the city and for your friends.
Also true. If anybody out there wants a bike, hit me up.
So yeah, let's talk about that. How can we reach you? You got some social media you want
to
promote?
Yeah, I mean my Instagram is Count Negroni because I was fortunate to be early on that.
Wow.
Yeah, dude.
Holy shit.
No numbers, yeah. No underscore, just like Count Dracula, but Count Negroni. And
that's pretty dope,
dude.
That's really dope.
Has Campari like offered you like $1,000,000?
Not yet, dude. I'm waiting though because I promote Campari on the daily. Yeah. On the daily, it is the bottle I reach for more than anything other, except perhaps sherry.
Yeah,
and the Sexton.
And the Sexton.
I can't wait to reach for that all the time.
You're gonna be reaching for it. Yeah, it's good stuff. So you're Count Negroni on Instagram. You got any other social you want to pitch, or is that good?
I mean, my Facebook, it's my name, Thomas Spaeth, S-P-A-E-T-H. Feel free to DM, and I'd love to talk about getting you riding, because I am a firm believer in the positive power of cycling.
Rad. That's well stated, buddy. All right, so that's going to wrap us up for this week's Speakeasy. Tune into Heritage Radio Network for thousands of other shows just like this one. Go to our website and click on the Beating Heart. Now, Damon, they've got a new feature on the donate button where you can choose the show you want to donate to. You can choose the Speakeasy. You can choose any show you like and donate directly to that show. It all goes to help the network stay on the air, though.
You donate on behalf of the engineer, Dave.
You can donate to Dave. directly. goes directly to his TD bank account. So we're going to hang out in the studio for a little bit and drink some more Sexton Irish whiskey. And then we're going to come back at you next week. So please tune in.
And also, I'm follower number 802
of Count Negroni.
Excellent.
Right. Thank you, Damon.
You got it.
Next time you're gathered with friends or posted up at your favorite bar, reach for the Sexton, the best-selling Irish single malt in North America. You can still learn more at thesexton.com. Cheers, guys.
And you can learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
That's right. All the dots.
All right, that's it for the Speakeasy. Cheers, guys. Thanks for coming in, man. Cheers. It's been a real blast. And we're gonna see you on that damn boat.
Yeah, man. Yes, let's go check it out.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sound. It's gonna get you sun in the air.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.